Welcome back to this week's Off the Bench podcast from the Premier League. I'm Sam from FPL Family.
And I'm FPL Harry.
Well, Harry, it's a fun week for us to be on together. Fun in the loosest sense of the word, of course, because our teams played each other at the weekend when Spurs played Chelsea. More on that later, unfortunately. But for my FPL team, I wish I was on last week because Van de Ven just skyrocketed my bench boost. Everything had gone well. This week I've had a bit of a nightmare. But let's talk about yours first. How did it go?
Yeah, I have to say I'm having the week that you had last week. For those of you, unfortunately, because it's podcast, can't see the grin on my face as Sam started to talk about the Chelsea Spurs game, but also to have a 90 point game week to go with it and a big green arrow. Only two players blanking for me in Semenyo and Enzo Fernandez. But if my Chelsea players want to blank while they beat Spurs, then that's not the end of the world.
Oh, it's begun already. Meanwhile, I had a nightmare. So I decided this week felt like the week to go a little bit different with the captaincy. So Haaland, I felt it was a more difficult fixture. And I just started to think that maybe this was the opportunity to just play it a little bit different with a player from a team that I felt had a better fixture. And I got that right in terms of Arsenal's performance in the game. And to be fair, Saka's, and we'll talk about that later, but captain and Saka and him blanking, well, picking up a clean sheet point, but otherwise blanking, was not fun on Saturday, because as soon as the Sunday rolled in and I thought, well, I might be looking okay right now, but if Haaland does anything now, my rank is just going to tumble. And of course it did, as we'll talk about later. I had Gabriel and Timber clean sheets, but to be honest, outside of that, everything was really difficult. Obviously I sold João Pedro this week, bought in Mateta. That kind of washed its face, really. I mean, yeah, they did the same thing, so no real gain from that. Voltomada was hauled off at halftime. Semenyo blanked again. Kudus was probably the bright spark in the Spurs team, but nonetheless, nothing from him. I had a real head over heart argument with myself on Saturday morning, and I could not decide what to do with Reinders and Caicedo. And in the end, I thought, I'll just leave it as it is and I'll play Reinders. And then he got benched, comes on for a one-pointer and had Caicedo on my bench for his 10 points against Spurs. So yeah, it was just a really, really difficult week. A red arrow, not a huge red arrow, but nonetheless a red arrow. Had I just left the armband with Haaland, had I played Caicedo, that I thought it would have been a nice green arrow, but it's just one of those unfortunate weeks where nothing really went right. So yeah, especially on the back of last week, which was so positive, it feels a bit difficult. Anyway, that's enough of my misery.
Yeah, I mean, the Saka one particularly, I had two big chances and missed both of them. On another day, he puts at least one of them in and the damage doesn't look nearly as bad. And Pep said he really wanted to play Reinders, but he hadn't trained enough during the week. So again, one going into the deadline that if we'd have had the information of that, then you would have played Caicedo and it would have looked a little bit different.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's one of those weeks, isn't it, where on Sunday, you know, had we been doing this podcast on Sunday, I would have been in a very different mood. Now I'm more reflective about it. And it's kind of like, well, I still stand by those decisions. You know, Saka, as you say, couldn't easily should have been better than it was. It's just a shame then that Haaland did what he did, because with his ownership as it is right now and the level of captaincy that he has, it does kind of put me off a little bit from trying to be different. It makes me want to play it a little bit safer, which isn't really the way I like to play FPL. So anyway, well, we can talk about that later when we get to Man City game. Should we just get it out of the way, Harry, and talk about the Chelsea Spurs game?
Yeah,
I feel like we have to. Go on, you start. You tell me about Chelsea.
I mean, like, historically, this is a fixture where the Chelsea players know what it means. And I think we saw that again, over 3xG for Chelsea in this game to 0.1xG for Spurs. And a lot of popular picks on the Spurs team in Van de Ven and Kudus in particular, struggling to get returns. But the FPL being the game that we play, João Pedro being the most transferred out forward, as soon as that Chelsea goal notification comes up, you just thought that it was going to be him finally getting his returns after weeks of not shooting. Caicedo again getting return. How long can we ignore him? I'm also looking at a certain slightly more defensive midfielder in Declan Rice at Arsenal and wondering, are these players just better than some of the more attacking midfielders that we're picking? So I'm sure we'll talk about him. You've got him. And I think one of the big debates for people with Caicedo is, do I play him or do I bench him most weeks? Mm-hmm. And he seems to be putting up the numbers that maybe he's just a start every week, although trying to predict when he's going to get an attack and return does feel quite difficult. For Chelsea, the next couple of fixtures of Wolves at home and Burnley away look really nice. And that's probably where people are looking. Enzo Fernandez had a couple of chances. The clean sheet came in if you went with them defensively. So a lot of positives for us, with the ownership being quite low, apart from maybe in João Pedro, and I suppose more negatives for you, but the ownership on Spurs players being quite high.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Caicedo came in for me a couple of weeks ago. He scored 3 goals now, which is only one off his last 4 seasons combined. So, you know, I talk to a lot of Chelsea fans and they all go, oh, how long can this go on for? And I'm like, well, the way that he's playing right now, there's no suggestion that it's kind of going to let up. I'm not suggesting for a second that he's going to get 20 goals over the course of the season. But, you know, if he gets 3 every 10 game weeks, at his price point, that's a fantastic return for us, particularly because of the DEFCON potential that he has as well. So if you're averaging 4 points a game week and then every 2 or 3 weeks he pops in with an attacking return, be it an assist or be it a goal, then, you know, I can't help but think that as your 5th midfielder, that is kind of the perfect mix of what you need. So some attacking threat. Now, his XG per 90 is awful. Is 0.06. So, you know, it's not exactly setting the world on fire, but I really like him as a cheap option. And I think what you said before is really interesting because, you know, in the past we would have gone, well, we have Saka and we have Cole Palmer and we have these more expensive, even Enzo Fernandez, these more expensive Chelsea midfielders, Arsenal midfielders. But actually, because of the change that the DEFCON has made, because of the slightly different roles that they're playing in the team right now, Caicedo and Rice looking like really, really good options. Disappointing to have benched him this week, but I'll play him over the next 2 for sure, because yeah, I can't help but think that, you know, as long as nothing happens to him in the Champions League, that he'll be a really good pick in those couple of weeks.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, he's one of those players that when the Chelsea team sheet comes out every week, you don't have to worry about whether he's going to be on it or not. But with the likes of Delap coming back, Palmer hopefully not being too far away, we haven't seen much of him so far this season, the sort of minutes for a lot of those other attackers become slightly less clear than maybe we've seen in the past. But you know that Caicedo is going to be there every single week. Talk to me about Spurs then.
Oh, goodness me. When the team sheet came out, I was like, oh dear, what is that front 4 doing? And then obviously Lucas Bergvall, who I really rate, gets injured very early on, has to go off and now is out for a couple of weeks with the concussion protocol. The rest of the front 3, I mean, with the exception of Kudus, who has by far and away been our best player so far this season, the most creative. But the problem is you can create as many chances as you like, but if nobody's really finishing them, you've got issues. And I think what we saw in the game against Chelsea is Kudus just getting increasingly frustrated and taking long-range shots from outside the box, which were never really going to trouble Sanchez in goal. And that's difficult then. And as a Kudus owner, you know, he is currently the most sold player heading into game week 11. And I'm not surprised really, because the Spurs fixtures are very much mixed. They've got Manchester United up next. It's another home game where we have been poor. We're much better on the road than we have been at home so far this season. But I do think that the changing around of the guard up in the, particularly up top with, you know, Kolo Muani, who started this one, or Richarlison, or Tell, there hasn't been that consistency of partnerships. And I think that is proving problematic. Obviously, last week against Everton, it was a very different game, but it was set piece threat that we were scoring from. And yeah, it was a difficult game for Kudus. Vicario probably is the standout player from this one for us. He made 8 saves during the game, which is the most in a match so far this season. He's got 34 saves now across the course of the season so far. That places him 3rd amongst the keepers. Only Sells and Dubravka have conceded more. Now, obviously, those two aren't necessarily picks that you're going to play every week anyway because of the teams that they've been playing for. But Vicario has been looking like a really decent option over the last couple of weeks. Obviously, he doesn't keep the clean sheet in this one. But frustrating from Spurs. I didn't trust the clean sheet. I benched Van de Ven this week. I think if you've got him, he still remains an okay hold. I think for me, Kudus, though, is... he's starting to, despite looking good and despite the fact that probably over the last 3 or 4 weeks, he probably should have had 2 goals and a couple of assists. The lack of returns has been difficult to stomach. And I think at this point, I'm probably looking to move him on. Just one more further word on João Pedro before we leave this game and move on. Top four XG underachievers in game week 11, despite the fact that he scored. This was a complete change around from what we'd seen from João Pedro over the recent weeks. Can't help but feel he kind of trolled us all a little bit because we all sold him. And then he was like, oh, FPL managers, what are you doing? Here is my best performance in a long, long time. Partly, I think, allowed by how Spurs played, but partly just to do with how good Chelsea were in this one. So, yeah, frustrating. But I've kind of got used to losing to Chelsea at the Spurs Stadium. So let's move on quickly. I think, you know, probably Spurs are becoming a bit of a sell. Chelsea, definitely a hold, if not a buy at this point. Should we go to Man City?
Yeah, let's. I mean, all the talk this week on every week is Erling Haaland, but I think the big takeaway was Reinders not starting this game. Mm-hmm. He was one of the most popular picks earlier on in the season after that game week one haul, and we saw his price go up and up, and we thought, he's being underpriced here. He's going to be a great pick. And then after a couple of weeks, it slowed down and now it started to return. And I think it's almost back down to exactly where he started at the beginning of the season. And Cherki came in, picked up a couple of assists and looked really good. And Foden picking up his first attacking return of the season. It's starting to feel a little bit more difficult to know exactly where he's going to fit into that Manchester City lineup. Although Pep did say that he wanted to play him and he hadn't trained enough during the week. So I've still got him and he's just on my bench every week at the moment until I see a clear replacement or I see him getting back into the team. And for the time being, that might be where he stays. He's still got chances when he came on, had a good shot saved, a couple of chances created as well. So I don't think he's completely done in the water, but I'm struggling to find a place in my starting lineup for him at the moment.
Yeah, and I have been foolishly playing him every week. And this one, it's like we said at the beginning, right? I think had I known that he hadn't trained much this week and was therefore a doubt, I absolutely would have benched him and played Caicedo instead. But we didn't have the luxury of that information heading into the game week. Only one assist for him in his last nine matches and then benched in game week 10. It's starting to feel like a sell for me, particularly as I've played my bench boost. I'm now starting to think, well, do I realistically need to spend that? I could downgrade him to Josh King, who got two more points than him in this game week. And Josh King then is an obvious benching every week. So then it allows better formation shifts maybe across the rest of my team because I'm not feeling compelled to play this Manchester City player every week because they play for Manchester City. And I do think that has an impact in my head. Obviously, Erling Haaland was captained by the most heavily captained player in the game weeks, over 6.3 million managers captaining him. Two goals, maximum bonus points, still the highest scoring player in fantasy. He's now up to 98. So we'll see him break the 100 mark next week, bar anything ridiculous happening. Six goal attempts, all from inside the box, four of them on target. He's really clinical this season. And I think, you know, as much as I sometimes want to think outside the box with the captaincy, it's becoming increasingly hard to do that because unless your captain goes off, you know, had Saka scored the two opportunities that he had, then maybe I'd have felt differently heading into this one. But the absolute fear of not having captained him, it's not even just not having him anymore, it's not having captained him. But I do struggle a little bit with who to back him up with from Manchester City. Like, obviously you have Haaland, obviously you captain him. But Cherki was back and fantastic. He was fantastic in this game. Three attempts on goal. Leeds and Sunderland, both at home in the next five matches. I think there's a really good value in there at 6.3, particularly if you're looking to downgrade somebody like Kudus. But I don't think we can be certain that he's going to nail down a starting place in that team because you've got other players that can come in and play in those positions. We're going to have Rodri back, the impact that Rodri has on Reinders, what Reinders' impact has on Cherki. You've got Marmoush there as well. You've got Foden there as well. You've got Bernardo. There's so many options that Pep has at his disposal. And outside of Haaland, I struggle with picking anyone else.
Yeah, and that's the thing with picking Manchester City players is they've got to be so good and so much better than the other player you can pick at that price and in that position to make you want to do it, to put up with the lack of security of minutes that you're going to get with that player. And there are some other good midfielders in and around that price. We've already spoken about Enzo Fernandez. You've got someone like Ismail Assar in there. You've, of course, got Caicedo. You've got Declan Rice, players in that price point who are performing very well. They're not only performing well, but you know they're going to be on the team sheet every week. Whereas to pick a Manchester City attacker to go with Haaland, that you just don't know is going to be there every week. When they do play, they've got to be getting so many returns to make it worthwhile. And the other thing is, Erling Haaland is the only Manchester City player to have scored more than one goal so far this season. He is absolutely hogging all the chances. It is a mission to create him big chances for him to score. And if that's going to keep going, well, yes, the player you might be buying might be assisting Haaland, but if they're not going to be getting on the score sheet consistently, as much as you have to watch Manchester City look great every week going forward with only one player in your team, if he's the only one scoring goals, then it doesn't feel too bad. But I know what you mean, especially with Leeds at home, Sunderland at home, West Ham at home after the Liverpool fixture. I want to have a second piece of it, whether it's, you know, going forward, whether it's in defence, but I still struggle anywhere to see where I'd want to invest.
Yeah, I feel the same. And for me, that's slightly problematic. It was also made slightly problematic when I look across at the Bournemouth side, because I played Senesi this week, because despite the fact that he was playing Manchester City, I kind of felt like he had more potential than Van de Ven against Chelsea. And that was proven right, because Senesi, yet again, picking up the additional points, obviously he loses one for conceding three goals, but 3 points for him this week, DEFCON again, 16 DEFCON now for him over the course of the season so far. Still looking okay, but I don't know with Bournemouth, you know. Like I was having a conversation the other day about Semenyo, because the last couple of weeks, he just hasn't really been the same player. And I appreciate that when Krupa Jr. plays, it has an impact for sure on Semenyo's game. And Evan Nilsson is probably the best player to play alongside him, because of the way that Evan Nilsson's lack of selfishness is so good for Semenyo. They're such a great partnership together, and it does improve Semenyo. But just one assist now for Semenyo in the last three matches after a phenomenal start to the season. The underlying numbers are just starting to dip. And I'm just starting to wonder whether he might be one of those players. You remember a couple of seasons ago when we all held Cole Palmer for all that time, despite the fact that the form had just disappeared, because we saw such a brilliant start and we were all kind of there going, well, you know, he was great. He'll come back. And I'm just starting to wonder whether now, is Semenyo's form dipping? Now, obviously, Evan Nilsson, we saw him come off the bench in this one, so maybe things will change. And the fixtures remain nice, right? It's Villa, then West Ham, Sunderland, Everton, before Chelsea, Manchester United, and then Burnley. So I don't think he's a massive panic, but what did you make of him in this one? Because for me, I'm kind of watching him intently, because the midfielders are so disappointing right now that I'm there. That's the position I'm looking to change up.
Yeah, and with his price having gone up so much since the start of the season, up to 8 million, you then look at a lot of those cheaper midfielders and think, well, they could match you for a big chunk of money less than he is now. I do think the past couple of games they've had Palace in there and Manchester City are not the easiest, especially as you say, to go into those fixtures without Evan Nilsson alongside him means that, yes, Krupa Jr. has been great and scored a lot of goals for Bournemouth in that time and massively helped them. But I don't think he helps Semenyo nearly as much. And Semenyo is then needed to do a lot of the work if he wants to get an attack and return on his own a little bit. And with Evan Nilsson coming back, now we don't know if he's going to go straight back into the team, because Krupa Jr. has been good for
really
them
good.
And scoring goals. You know, if you Semenyo doesn't score as many goals, but Krupa Jr. does, then you get to the same outcome. So we'll have to wait and see what happens there. But I would expect Evan Nilsson probably does, because of the point that you say, he makes the team better. Now, in a fixture where they might look to score a few goals, I think Krupa Jr. is great. But in a game where they might need to control it a little bit more, I think Evan Nilsson is the best solution. And I think he will make Semenyo better. And with particularly those three home games that they've got of West Ham, Everton and Burnley in the next 7 weeks, I think it makes sense to hold him for now. But I wouldn't be surprised if we get to the end of that run and it's been a bit underwhelming again, as you say.
Yeah, absolutely. Should we chat about one of the most transferred in players then this week? Because Jean-Philippe Mateta, we've just been talking about Evan Nilsson and Haaland, and we've had a conversation about João Pedro at the beginning. Behind Mbeumo, Jean-Philippe Mateta was the most transferred in player this week. So over a million managers deciding that now was the time that he came into their teams, including myself. João Pedro to him felt like a bit of a no-brainer really this week. And he immediately kind of repaid the faith that managers showed in him. He scored his goal, gets the maximum bonus points, 6 goals, 31 goal attempts, 25 shots in the box, 15 big chances. All of that is ranked second for forwards in the game right now, behind, of course, only the big man in Erling Haaland over the course of the season. So fantastic stats. Probably a bit unlucky, actually, in this one, not to get more than just the one goal in reality. I think, you know, we could have seen a bit more from Mateta in this one, but goodness, he's a player that I am really glad to have in my team, despite the fact that I'm now thinking, should I not have sold João Pedro to have him there? But I feel like Jean-Philippe Mateta's fixtures moving forward make him pretty much essential.
Yeah, you stole my stats. To be second in the league for behind Haaland for pretty much everything, and not just amongst forwards, but amongst all players. Yeah, shots, big chances, shots in the box, shots on target. To be second behind Haaland, who's basically owned by everyone. So out of the remaining players, he's then top with the upcoming fixtures. He's just everything you want in an FPL forward. Like, yes, you can have players who go on a bit of a hot run because they're scoring from their only shots, or they're getting a couple of chances and then it dries up. The fact that he's had 15 big chances already this season from 10 games, he is just the main goal threat in that Crystal Palace team. He looks like he wants to have a chance pretty much every single game. And then when you combine all of those chances with the fact that he's on such good form, I sold João Pedro. And I'm not ruling out the fact that I might go back to João Pedro this week.
Me neither.
not from Mateta, but I have an injured Arsenal forward who I might look to sell instead. But I am absolutely glad that I bought Mateta. And although he only matched João Pedro, I've no regret of doing that transfer. I think that the next question is with Palace is, what do you add on top of him?
Agreed.
Do you go for an Ismaïla Sarr, or do you go for one of the many defenders who seem to pick up points every single week?
Do you know what, Harry? This was one of my big conundrums this week. So I don't have a Palace defender, and it is killing me a lot every week, because not only do they keep clean sheets, but they also get defensive contribution points. They also continue to get attacking returns, be it from Munoz, be it from Gehi. It's constant at the moment. So, and every time that happens, you know, when you look at their individual ownership, they don't look that highly owned. So you think, oh, well, it won't hurt that much. But actually the reality is that across Gehi, Munoz, Richards and Lacroix, as well as Dean Henderson, there's a high spread of managers that have got those. And when you add them all together, most of them aren't having two or three of these guys. So you've got a good chunk of FPL managers that do have a Palace defender in their team. Now, going into this one, I thought the only one I can realistically afford is to go for Richards, who was obviously still a bit of a doubt heading into the weekend. And I was a little bit unsure about whether to risk it or not. And in the end decided I'll just play it out. So when I saw him in the starting 11, I was like, that's a bit frustrating, because I think otherwise I would have done the Van de Ven to Richards transfer. Again, a bit like had we known about Reinders. But it does feel now like a Palace defender would be a really wise investment, even if Gehi doesn't continue to post these attacking returns that we've seen over the course of the season so far. You can bet that he'll be in and amongst the defensive contribution points most weeks. The same with Lacroix and Richards. And Munoz always has the potential for an attacking return. So them definitely feels like it. Have you got a Palace defender?
Yeah, so I've got Richards, and I love having him. And I think he's probably the best cheap defender you can own, especially with the fixtures that they've got coming up. But it doesn't stop me every single week looking at all of the others and thinking, oh, I wouldn't mind, you know, Mark Gay for his attacking threat. I wouldn't mind going up to Munoz. And then I'm like, well, do I really want to take out Richards to do that? Who is just nice and consistent, 4.5 million. At the end of the season, he'll probably be the highest scoring player at that price, unless you include Senesi, who's now an awful lot more expensive. And the fact that he's still 4.5 million means if you need a way into the Palace defense and you don't quite have the money, or you want something nice and cheap, you can still go there. Like, he's good for defensive contributions. His attacking threat's not quite as good as some of the other ones. But I suppose the only slight doubt I have with him is he's always the first of that defense to drop out if they make a change. When they change in Europe, he's always the first one not to play. If they make a change in the cup, it's always him. Now, does that mean he's more rested when the games do come around, or when we get to the Christmas schedule? Could that happen once or twice? That's the only thing. Now, he's played 90 in every single Premier League game so far this season. All of them have. And I don't have much doubt that that's likely to continue almost all of the time. I think he's great at the cheap price, but I look at Munoz as the nice attacking threat, slightly good at DEFCON pick that you can get if you've got money in the bank. So I find it really difficult. And whichever one you go with, there'll be a week where you're on the wrong one and yeah. you wish you had one of the other ones.
It's hard though, isn't it? Because I do think that Crystal Palace defence just, it looks solid. But you, I suppose the positive thing here is that you do have a spread of prices. So if you've got 5.7, you can go for Munoz. If you don't, I mean, you've got to pay a lot more than you would have had to at the beginning of the season, but you've got Gahey and Lacroix in at 5. And then you can drop down to Richards at 4.5. So I definitely feel like I need to invest. I'd really like Gahey. He's the one that I'm kind of like most attracted to right now in terms of player pricing and in terms of value, potential value for money and upside potential there. The issue I have is that Mickey van der Ven plus the 0.3 million in the bank doesn't get me there, but it does get me to Richards. So maybe actually Richards is probably the way that I'll go, unless I'm happy to make a transfer elsewhere and downgrade somebody else to free up some money, because I am, you know, I'm starting to feel very strongly about the fact that I've got double Arsenal defence, and we'll go to Arsenal next. I've got the double Arsenal defence in play. So two of my three defenders every week are always Arsenal. Senesi, 9 times out of 10, I'm going to start because of his defensive contribution throughout and the fact that the fixtures coming up for Bournemouth are really nice. So that means I'm going to have to move to four at the back. So when I was talking earlier about downgrading Reinders to potentially someone like Josh King, that would enable a Mark Gahey instead of a Richards. And maybe I just feel more comfy there. But it is tough. It's tough to kind of work out which of the Palace defenders is the one to go for. Because as you say, every time I watch Daniel Munoz, I think, God, I sold you on my wild card and I really wish I hadn't.
Yeah, and it almost feels with him like you're owning a defender, but also an attacker. When you watch them go forward, they look so good. Now, Ismail Assar owners will feel very hard done by that he didn't put one of his chances away to get something in this game. And he still looks like a great pick again. A lot of the conversations at the moment are around those sort of 6 to 7.5 million midfielders. And he is absolutely high priority in that bracket. Unlucky not to come away with anything in this game, but still looked very, very good. The only talking point on Brentford from this game is, of course, Thiago. A lot of people looking for forwards at the moment, didn't get anything in this, but has been pretty consistent so far this season. Was a little bit quieter of a game for him, but at a nice cheap price, along with Danny Welbeck, those two seem to be fighting it out as the best cheap forward in the game. And one will score 1 week and then it'll be a different one next week. So I suppose by that, we should all buy Thiago this week. I have looked at him as a potential forward to buy into my team. I think some of the long-term fixtures for them look pretty nice. Any consideration for anyone at Brentford, or is it mainly Thiago?
I think it's mostly Thiago for me. There are other players for me that you could go to. You've got players like Sharda or Dango that you know offer a decent potential option, but they feel a bit punty. Whereas Thiago feels like if Brentford are going to score, he's most likely to be involved in it. I don't really like the defence. I know that, you know, last season under Frank, the defence was really solid and they were a team that you could definitely invest in. This season, I kind of look at it and go, there's moments where I think, you know, defensively they look good. But even when you look at the fixtures over the coming weeks, I'm not sure how many clean sheets there's going to be for them. So it's Newcastle up next. And then after that, it's Brighton. And you just talked about Danny Welbeck and his fantastic form before Burnley. But then Arsenal, Spurs, Leeds. I would expect there to be goals from most of those teams. And beyond that, it's Wolves in game week 17, but new manager bounce potentially, depending upon who they sign. Maybe by game week 17, Wolves might look different before then Bournemouth, Spurs and Everton again. So I don't really love the defence. I think Thiago is probably the best of the attacking players for sure. But I'm just mindful of the fact that my front three now is Haaland and Mateta and Voltimada, who was the biggest disappointment of the game week for me. So
I think Newcastle probably, we can talk about them, were probably the biggest disappointment overall for a lot of people. There were some Anthony Gordon owners knocking around. There were Pope owners, Dan Burn owners, of course, Voltimada owners, and Voltimada and Gordon not only blanking, but being taken off at halftime.
Yeah.
In a fixture where I think most of us would have expected and would have bought them, looking at this fixture thinking, this is one where I'd hope to get some returns in away at West Ham. But West Ham put on a good performance. They took their chances well and got the third one very late on. So it was quite close. But it was 3 points very much needed for West Ham and feels like a big missed opportunity for Newcastle and for those with Newcastle players in their team. You've said you got Walter Marder. What's the plan with him going forward now?
Well, I got him and Pope. So going into this weekend, I was like, right, okay. West Ham have looked a bit better under Nuno and they are better, you know, in home games. But equally, I've got these two Newcastle players that I'm really pleased to have. And I think this could be really good. In fact, Walter Marder had my vice-captain's armband. I was that confident that he would do well this week. So actually, thank goodness Saka played, because otherwise I really would have been in the mud with just a 2-point captaincy. He had no attempts on goal at all in that first half. Anthony Gordon had one. They look really poor, both of them, to be fair. And at halftime, he brings them both off. I didn't think that Newcastle looked much better afterwards. That was the problem, is that he brought them both off. And then both, the whole team just seemed to lack any creativity, lack any spark. I think across the game, they created 8 chances, which isn't a huge amount. And actually, 4 of them came from Bruno Guimarães. And then you had 1 from Murphy, 1 from Elanga, 1 from Botman, and 1 from Walter Marder. So it's not like, you know, they were really unlucky in this game. West Ham, it was tight. And maybe, you know, at the end of the game, West Ham get the last goal. And the scoreline maybe looks like it was more of a runaway for West Ham than it actually was. But I was really disappointed in them. Having said all of that, I bought Walter Marder in for a reason. And, you know, the fixtures continue to look nice. Obviously, it's Brentford up next. Then it's a difficult game against Man City. But then it's Everton, Spurs, Burnley, Sunderland. These are defences that have been conceding goals. And even Manchester City, right? They regularly concede a goal here and a goal there. So Walter Marder feels like a hold, at least up until the Chelsea game in game week 17. But there is a real temptation to downgrade him to somebody like a Thiago or a Danny Welbeck, because that additional money goes a long way in strengthening or trying to improve the midfield, which I think is lacking, or gets me a little bit higher on that Crystal Palace defender potential buy list. So I'm not going to panic yet. I think, you know, a half-time substitution and a one-point cameo, but in reverse of when you normally get a 1-point cameo, because normally it's just coming on like Reinders did. So this was a starting 1-point cameo. I think I'll let it be, see how we get on against Brentford in game week 11, and then make a judgment after that. Obviously, you know, it's not ideal, but it doesn't feel like a panic sell that I need to make yet.
No, I agree. And it feels like a money thing, that if you decided you needed some money for something else, then Walter Marder to a Welbeck or Thiago is a fine move to make. But if they were the same price, you wouldn't be considering making that swap at all. It'd be probably the best of the three. So yeah, it's probably just a wait and see if you need to take some money out. I suppose on West Ham, not much investment in them and not wanting to get carried away, but they do play Burnley at home going into game week 11. Afterwards, though, it is Bournemouth, Liverpool, Man United, Brighton, Villa, Man City. So this is probably a one-stop gap if you wanted to take a bit of a punt for 1 week before a wild card, for example. If you're wildcarding over the international break and you wanted a differential for 1 week, maybe a West Ham player, I can't believe I thought I'd be saying this a week ago, might be where you decide to look. And maybe last week we'd be saying maybe you could punt on Anthony or one of the Burnley players. But Jared Bowen, Lucas Paqueta could be interesting differentials if you need them for just 1 week, I suppose.
Yeah, Paqueta on 3 goals now for the season, just 1 away from his personal best of 4 in the previous 3 seasons. So, you know, we're only 10 game weeks in. That's not bad, is it, from him? And as you say, I don't think you'd want him as a long-term pick, but if you're planning to wildcard into game week 12 over the international break, then for a 1 week punt, he looks all right, does Paqueta, for this time. Where should we go next? Should we talk about Liverpool for a minute? Because I think over the last few weeks, Liverpool have been struggling. Let's say struggling. That's a nice way of putting it. They've been struggling. They've not really found their feet. This week felt a bit like a return to the Liverpool of last year in terms of the way that they set up, in terms of the way that they performed. Obviously, we had like Robertson back instead of Kirk Ayres. We had a bit more of a traditional front three from them with Ekitike and Salah and Gakpo. We saw players playing a little bit more in the positions that we would have expected them to. Salah, who's now dropped down to 14.2 million, has scored for his second successive match. His form's starting to improve now. 8 shots over the last 2 matches, 3 more than any other Liverpool player. I still wouldn't buy him, despite the pickup in form from him. Weirdly, the Liverpool player that I'm looking at the most is Gravenberch. Because again, I'm looking in the cheap midfielder bracket and he's looking okay. And actually the Liverpool fixtures after the game against Man City. So I'm not going to be getting him this week because it's Man City. But then after that, Nottingham Forest, West Ham, Sunderland, Leeds, Brighton, Spurs, Wolves, Leeds, Fulham. Fixtures are
good. This is it. I've been waiting for this sort of game week 12, trying to roll as many transfers because I knew when this Liverpool fixture run came around, even despite recent performances, I know I'm going to want something from them. I can't go into that run of fixtures and have no Liverpool in my team. But that is the hardest point. It's who do you go for? Now, Liverpool did win this game 2-0. I was slightly disappointed by what I saw from Aston Villa in this game. I actually thought so many teams have done well against Liverpool in recent weeks by doing specific things like going direct, making it difficult
long balls.
Making it difficult for them defensively. And they didn't really do that. They did what a lot of teams did last year where Liverpool won the league and tried to play it around and got caught by the press, particularly early on. And Salah definitely looked better, but I'm not naive to think that he scored because Martinez tried to clear it out and gave it straight to him for an open goal. I am also looking at a cheap midfielder, more in the name of Dominic Szoboszlai, who's been pretty good so far this season. Now, he's also been very good for defensive contributions, which has propped up his numbers as well. But that's partly because he plays minutes at right back. So you get the benefit if he's playing at right back, you get the defensive contributions, although his attacking return does go down a little bit. So you do need to have that. But the other place I'm looking is defensively. And if I'm trying to find a player who plays every week, I do wonder about both Van Dijk and Konate. Now, Konate actually is cheaper and has defensive contributions in 4 of his last 5, whereas Van Dijk only has it once in that period. So there might actually be a slightly cheaper way into that Liverpool defence. Now, defensively, they haven't looked great recently, so it would be a bit of a plunge and a hope and a prediction that things were to get better. But I just look at those fixtures and think, I need to find a way to buy one of these. I don't know where it is in my team yet, but I look at that fixture run. And if I've got one of them, I just put them in and just leave them because of how good the fixtures can be.
It's difficult though, because I think, you know, the next two are really difficult. Obviously, they've got a very difficult Champions League game in midweek this week, followed by Manchester City. The positive thing from us in FPL is it gives us two good matches to watch Liverpool, watch how they set up, watch how they perform in terms of, do we see the continuation of this kind of more traditional Liverpool team that we kind of got used to under Klopp? Or do we start to see him bring back the likes of Kerkez and Wirtz into this team and how he plays with those guys and whether that impacts minutes and performances from others? So I'm it's definitely a watching brief for Liverpool. Gravenberch feels like the one that feels easiest for me to get right now. I don't really love it though. I do prefer Konate over Van Dijk, but I don't know that I love the Liverpool defence because even in those, you know, easier fixtures that they have coming up, I still think that there are goals for those teams. Like, would it surprise you to see the likes of Jarrod Bowen in the West Ham game, Isadore in the Sunderland game, Danny Welbeck in the Brighton game? It wouldn't surprise me to see those players score against Liverpool. And that's what puts me off, because defensively they haven't been so solid. Plus, I don't think you have the luxury of being able to go for the goalkeeper at the moment, because we don't really know how long we're going to see Alisson out for yet. So definitely a watching brief for Liverpool. They looked better, but I do think they look better partly because of how poor Aston Villa were tactically. I just think they got it entirely wrong in this one.
Yeah, I agree. Just in the consciousness of time, I think there is one team that we have got to this point as Chelsea and Spurs fans. We do our best to ignore the fact that they are looking like they are running away with it.
They do. But
all of us have a lot of investment in Arsenal, and it was another game where the points just came in for a lot of their players. 2-0 away at Burnley, another clean sheet. Gabriel getting another attacking return. He's up to 6.6 million now. he feels more consistent than any defender I've owned in FPL over the past many years. And I even put someone like a Trent Alexander-Arnold for his attacking threat in there, because the clean sheets that they are keeping as just a base 6 points every week, plus the DEFCON he's adding, he just feels absolutely unstoppable. And it is where you add it on top. And there are so many good picks. I have Gyökeres, finally got his goal. But no, us Gyökeres owners can't have any positives to take away from it. Unfortunately, he goes off at half time, which does sound like not the best injury. Arteta in his press conference yesterday didn't sound too positive. Now we will hear again before the game week 11 deadline. But I've saved up a few transfers and it might finally be time to use some of them on selling him. Bukayo Saka, as you said, third for XG underachievers this week. Two attempts on goal, two big chances, both missed. And it was the other midfielder in Declan Rice who came away with one of the big returns. And just like looking at Chelsea, people are going for the more expensive ones in Enzo or Palmer, and it's Caicedo doing well. Declan Rice, the cheapest of the Arsenal midfielders, is the one that is getting the points every week. I am really tempted to buy him this week.
Because you're thinking about selling Gyökeres?
Yes.
Yeah. It's difficult, isn't it? Because I would absolutely love to own Declan Rice. He feels like a player that at his price point just looks incredible. Six attacking returns so far this season. That's the most in the Arsenal team. He's had defensive contributions twice. Bonus points, he's got 10 of them. Two double-digit hauls. I mean, with the exception of Gabriel and Timber, he is the highest scoring Arsenal attacking player. I mean, we kind of have to call Gabriel an attacking player at this point, but in the actual attacking players, he's the highest scoring attacking player in the Arsenal team with 63 points. But I am in a different position to you because I obviously have Gabriel because, I mean, goodness me, you have to. And I have Timber, but I have Saka over Gyökeres. And selling Saka, who was really unlucky in this game not to get something, to go sideways to Declan Rice, just does not feel like a very sensible thing to be doing. It feels like there's better things I should be doing with my team than thinking about selling Saka for Declan Rice, particularly as Saka has, you know, he's had less starts than Rice this season. So when we're looking at the points returns, obviously there's a significant difference in terms of the number of minutes and all of that stuff. So, but I really want him. I really want Declan Rice because I just think that we're seeing consistency from him. We're seeing these defensive contributions. We're seeing the clearances, the blocks, the interceptions. We're seeing the tackles, but we're also seeing the set piece threat that comes from him and the attacking return from just open play as well. So difficult one. If you've only got two, I think he's the obvious pick as a third.
Well, this is it. I sell Gyökeres and I can make it work with Saka. And he is still tempting to go and buy. But I think I saw a stat that since Declan Rice started taking over as many set pieces as he has, he's averaged over 6 points a game over the past, I think it's about 9 months or so, which if he's going to continue to do that and Arsenal relies so much on set pieces and he takes so much of them. Now, Saka does take some. He takes corners from that side.
Yeah.
But open play free kicks are practically all Declan Rice. And if Arsenal are going to rely on them as much as they are, then having the player who takes all of them feels like a no-brainer pick. So maybe Gyökeres being out for me offers me an easy way into it, but I still can't help and look at Saka and think he has got the highest ceiling still and we know what he's done historically.
Yeah.
The other thing I could do is not buy either of them and just get a third defender because I'm sat with David Raya and Gabriel, and if they keep as many clean sheets as they are at the moment, I don't think I can bring myself to do it, but I don't think it's the worst idea.
The thing is, when Arsenal are playing and you know you're listening to the coverage come through or you're watching it on the TV, it would be genuinely a shock to hear that they had conceded a goal. So this is how I look at it. Like when I'm looking at the defenders, I think there's not many teams that I would be surprised if they conceded. But Arsenal, genuinely, every week with the way that they're playing, I would be surprised if they conceded. And then you look at the fixtures. Now, they've got Sunderland up next in game week 11. I'd be surprised if they concede in that one. Then it's the North London derby. Well, who on earth knows what that will be like? I'm staying well out of any comment on that one. But it's always a bit of an odd game.
I'd be surprised if they conceded in that one.
Okay, we'll go with what you've just said. We usually do score we don't normally win, but we do normally score. Who knows by then what's going on there? Then it's your lot.
Yeah, which they could easily keep a clean sheet in as well.
Exactly. After that, it's Brentford in another London derby. Again, I think I'd be surprised if they conceded in that one. Before Villa, Wolves, Everton, Brighton, then Villa, then Bournemouth. Like, then we were at Christmas by this point, and I'm not seeing that many fixtures where I would be surprised if Arsenal, you know, I just think that the clean sheets are going to come on a regular basis. So I think having one is not enough. Because if you get one, you get clean sheet out of one of them, you think, oh, great. And then you look at your rank and it's been hurt by the fact that you don't have two, because actually you're not making any progress. You're just covering the Arsenal clean sheet. Whereas having two means that you do make some progress and you get some green arrows on the back of them keeping a clean sheet. So I do think that three is not terrible, but it rules you out of somebody like Declan Rice. And that's where I struggle with the third Arsenal defender.
Yeah. And if one of those attackers does start to return consistently, you will want them.
Yeah.
And if you go for the triple defence, you're never really going to want to take one out, even when one of the attackers starts to do well. So that's the decision I've got, because if I sell Gyökeres, I don't really want to only have two Arsenal players, and it's where I decide to invest in. Having a Saka and a Rice, they at least get the sort of 3-point starting point with a clean sheet, which I don't get with Gyökeres. And it might not sound a lot, but if they're on track to keep over 20 clean sheets this season, I wouldn't mind the extra 20 points that you're going to get from the plus one clean sheet points. But I think that is all. Arsenal, of course, one of the many teams playing midweek in the Champions League, along with Europa and Conference League. So if you can, try and hold fire with a few of your transfers this week.
Yeah, Jules and Kelly and I will be back on Thursday. Jules will give another one of his epic roundups about what's been happening in Europe, I'm sure. And I also bet he won't mention at all that he's captained Gabriel in game week 10, because he's not mentioned that at all in our group chats.
I know, honestly, when we got to the end of Saturday and there was a lot of talk about Gabriel captaincy, and I thought, well, we should have done it. But then no, Erling Haaland comes in and did exactly what he does. If you haven't done already, please don't forget to join the FPL Pod Mini League. The code is XY6XPL. Sam, it's been great chatting. I hope your game week 11 is better than your 10 was.
Fingers crossed. We're heading out of that one and into an international break, the last one of 2025. So I'm hoping for a bit of a green arrow, because there's nothing worse than looking at a red arrow over the course of an international break. Harry, it's been a pleasure. Good luck, everyone.